Halo, halo, Sacred Icon listeners. We used to do ads for other people, but I decided, why don't we do one for ourselves? Whether you're here listening to us for the first time or you've heard every episode, I'd like to briefly tell you what we're about and how you can support us. We have been doing this podcast since 2019, and with that has come lots of changes. We started as a primarily Halo-only show, but have evolved, combat evolved, over the years to talk about a wide variety of things in the realm of nerd culture. As you can imagine, we've made numerous changes to our platforms, usernames, and emails over the years, so now is the time for me to set things right and give the Covenant back their bomb. You can join our Discord by clicking the link included on our podcast feed. You can also send us an email or a voice message at sacrediconpodcast@gmail.com. We have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/sacredicon, and we no longer use Twitter or X or whatever else the kids are calling it these days. So if you see someone who looks like us there, just know it's not us. Lastly, you can support us on patreon.com/sacredicon and receive a bevy of bonus content. We're so glad you chose us to be the voice in your ear on this particular day and hope you enjoy the episode ahead.
What's good, Vault Dwellers? How you Vault Dwelling doing? Welcome to another episode of the Sacred Icon Podcast. It's your boy, Three Dog. Ow! And you're listening to a little Sacred Icon Radio. That's right, guys. We are here to talk some Fallout. The Fallout show, maybe a little bit of the Fallout games. We're here to have a little bit of, some radiational fun. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we're going to do. Brian is back from last week, which is just amazing. Had a great episode last week with Erwin and Jeff coming on to help me out, but Brian is back from his vacation, and he watched that show over there. He said, I cannot miss it, but a little under the weather. Brian, how you feeling? I got some sugar bombs up my ass right now, so I'm pumped, man. How you doing?
Man, I wish I had a sugar bomb up my ass. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. You know what comes to mind when I think of that? One word. Megaton.
Megaton. Yeah, okay. Nice. Very nice. No, I feel pretty good. I mean, I've felt mostly good all week. I had no voice, and then if you listen to Sacred Games Daily, my voice sounded a little worse yesterday, and now it's getting close to being back to normal, but I feel pretty good. Yeah, well, I went on vacation to Birmingham, Alabama, which I don't know if you listened to the High Potion episode, but they shouted me out there. I literally ate at a place that Hawes eats at.
Oh, really?
I was right next to Hawes.
Oh, wow.
He lives there.
I thought I remembered you saying that in the Discord, but I haven't heard their episode yet.
I mean, who knows how I could have drove there probably in, I don't know, 20 minutes.
That's insane, man.
That was cool. I basically just hung out at my brother's house because he just had his first child, his daughter, Amelia. So we were there to visit her. But a lot of it was just sitting around the house. So we watched all of Fallout and some movies and some documentaries and stuff and played a lot of video games on the portal and I played some RuneScape on my phone. So just a lot of sitting around.
I saw you talking about that in the Discord. I wonder if he's playing that again.
Just to kill time. It's been fun. But so we did a lot of relaxing. But we got to watch all the Fallout TV show. I watched two episodes a night when I was there. And it was really awesome. Way better than I expected it to be. But before we get into that, I was going to say, Let's share our first experiences, first exposure with Fallout. Josh, what was your first memory of either playing Fallout, seeing Fallout, having an interest in Fallout?
Okay, it's 2008, and I'm on Game Trailers. I know you remember it. I don't know how many of you guys out there remember Game Trailers, but it was really
fun.
What
Easy Allies is now today.
And I was a member on there, and they had a shop where you could earn, depending on how much activity you put out on their websites as a member, you could earn like almost virtual currency, and you could go in there and use that currency to purchase stuff in their shop on occasion. And occasionally they dropped video games, but it was very difficult to get them because a lot of people usually saved up their points, waited for that new game to drop, and it only ever seemed like they had maybe 2 to 3 copies they'd get in because they'd sell out instantly, super fast.
Yeah.
Well, I did that with Assassin's Creed. And that was pretty cool. But then it was coming around to Fallout 3. I had never heard of a Fallout game before. You know, just coming out and Bethesda saying, like, this is our next game after Oblivion, and it's called Fallout 3. I'm like, hold on. Wait a minute, buddy. Where's the first two? I'm like, hold on.
Yeah, right.
I don't remember you guys doing the first two. What is this? And then that's when I come to retroactively learn about the other ones. and how they kind of have now since inherited that franchise and they're putting it out. And I just remember the opening trailer for that when I went to look at the gameplay, just seeing the VAT system and the Butcher Pete song, like whatever the E3 demo was, that just their initial gameplay preview was so cool, even though I'm not, and still to this day, not typically a fan of the Wasteland as much in terms of like biome offerings, but I've really come around to it a lot, and I just thought it was so cool. It sold me on it, and I thought, man, Oblivion with guns. That was what I thought in my head.
Yeah.
So I was excited, but I didn't have a job at the time, and I'm living with my dad. We were living out in this place in Iowa that was an hour and a half away from all my friends and the rest of my family and everything like that. So it was really just my dad and I. I mean, I wasn't really going out. Didn't have my license yet or anything. Didn't have any of that. So it was really just staying home, being on the internet, playing video games on Xbox Live. And I waited and I waited. I saved up points on game trailers, and I managed to snag myself a copy. Well, the thing is that what ended up happening was we moved right around the time it was about to ship out. It would take forever for their games to ship out. And we moved out to a place in Illinois, farther out in the country and stuff like that. So the mail had to be redirected, which made it take even longer. Well, we found out once we moved in there, like probably the first week or so, that we couldn't get high-speed internet. We're talking like satellite only. I was devastated.
That is horrible.
Was crestfallen. And my dad felt bad, of course, too, but there's nothing we could do about it. I wasn't as aware of like what it took with internet stuff.
You could do what Justin's dad did and pay $3,000 to have them custom drill a line to your house.
Nope.
No, that's crazy.
But that, I mean, I commend anyone doing that because it sucks that it's crazy to think that we still don't have internet in today's times in some places, but I get it too. But anyway, we're out there and it's just my dad and I, again, still at this point, I think. Maybe, you know, I did have my license at this point, but not working or anything yet. And again, away from friends and family. So it's really just my games and what would have been internet. Well, now I don't have that. So Fallout 3 finally comes in and I'm sitting there. We had this massive basement and we had this nice, you know, glass windows in the basement, if I can think of what they are, that just gave me a clear look to the grasslands outside. Beautiful view. It's a beautiful house. But I'm sitting there at like night basically playing Fallout 3, and the first time I played it, I wasn't having a whole lot of fun, but it was more so because I'm like, man, I'm in this wasteland and it's quiet and desolate, and that's kind of the tone of it too, and I'm like depressed because I'm like, man, I'm just no internet, I don't have my friends around and all this stuff, and I can remember playing that game and it being eerie at times with the death claws, and one time this random cat like just walked across
those glass windows. How close to launch was this that you were playing it?
Oh, it's probably,
you said 2008, right?
Yeah, I think it took 2 months to get to me. Like, I ordered it the day it came out and was on the shop, but, like, it took, like, 2 months.
So, like, Christmas time.
Yeah, somewhere around there. I think it was January, actually. But anyway, that was my first experience. I mean, I kind of walked away from it because I just kind of, like, wanted to do other stuff, and it wasn't kind of making me feel better about my current situation. But I look back on that with a lot of fondness now, and I have been replaying a little bit of that of late because of the show, which I know we'll probably talk about too later on. But that is my first experience coming to grips with what Fallout is. So what about you, man? That was a lot.
Yeah, we have quite different experiences. Because for me, I remember being in high school, 2008. That was the year that Fallout 3 came out. But for me, 2008, there's two big games on the horizon I was excited for. Gears of War 2 and Fable 2. And Fable 2 was the first one to come out. Like, it was Fable 2, and then it was Fable 2 and Fallout, then Fallout 3, then Gears of War 2. Gears of War 2 is the latest one. So Fable 2 was, I was super excited for Fable 2. And for me, that was like one of the hugest games of the year. I just could not wait to play Fable 2. And I remember there being this guy at school that I wasn't really friends with, but I talked to him about Fable 2 because he was excited to get Fable 2 also. And I remember the game came out. I went to the midnight launch. I've told this story before, but basically I went to the midnight launch when I was too young to be out at night. I was driving around in my car with a car full of friends, and it was illegal in several ways. And my parents didn't feel good about it.
Bad boy, Brian.
Yeah, my parents didn't feel good about it, but they let me do it because I kept begging. And then we were out late getting Fable 2. And then that's the whole story of like when my parents said that I was going to school no matter what the next day. And I begged my parents because I got no sleep. And then I ended up staying home and
I love that you're out late doing stuff. Other people are like, we're out doing crack. What are you doing? I'm getting Fable 2.
Fable 2.
360.
And a 2-liter Mountain Dew, don't forget.
Comes with the pre-.
But yeah, so So I got Fable 2, and I remember coming to school the next day and talking to that kid who liked Fable 2 also, and I was like, man, it's so awesome. And he's like, yeah, Fable 2 is amazing. You know, I got the Legendary Edition, so I got Master Chief's armor and the Energy Sword in Fable 2, and I'm like, oh, are you kidding me? That's crazy. If you guys didn't know that, you can get those in the game. And so we were talking about Fable 2, and now I could look this up and easily find this out. I would guess that Fallout 3 came out within a week or two of Fable 2, because my memory is I talked to this kid about Fable 2 for a couple days, and then I come to school one day and he's not playing Fable 2 anymore. He's playing Fallout 3, and he's like, Fallout 3 is so amazing. It's so good. Screw Fable 2. I don't give a crap.
You're
about
not
Fable
wrong,
2.
Ryan. So how Fable, close was looking it? This up yeah. right now. So Fable 2 released October 21st of 2008. Okay. Fallout okay. 3 released October 28th. So literally
one week
later. Yeah.
Yeah. So a week later, this
memory
dude at school,
serves you well.
This dude at school gets Fallout 3 and he just drops Fable 2 and Fallout 3 is, and to be fair, and at least in my opinion, I think Fallout 3 is a monumentally better game than Fable 2, just in my opinion. So in retrospect, it made sense to me. He was like, he got Fallout 3 and he was like, well, screw Fable 2. This game sucks compared to Fallout 3. So he moved on to that. And I'm like, so I was kind of resentful. I'm like, Fable's the best. And what's this Fallout crap? I never even heard of it. And then I remember I was given this friend. You met him before, Stephen Fuqua. Oddly enough, he came with us to the Fallout 4 launch.
That's him. Wow. Yeah, I remember him.
Crazy how that ties in.
It's like poetry, Brian. It rhymes.
It rhymes, yeah. He was younger than me. He didn't have a license. And he hated riding the bus. And he asked me if I could give him rides home from school. And as me being 16 with a car, I thought it was cool. So I'm like, yeah, I'll give you rides home from school. No problem. And so he thought I was cool because of that. So I remember giving him rides home from school. And he had just got Fallout 3 also. And I was like, sometimes I'd hang out with him after I took him home and for like 30 minutes to an hour. And he's playing Fallout 3. And I was like, yeah, I want to see this because, you know, kids at school are talking about it. And I saw him like walking around in first person with the gun and then using the VAT system. And I'm like, this game looks like it sucks. I have no interest in this game. So I left and didn't care about it. Also, I found out it was by the people who made Oblivion. And if any of you have been listening to podcasts from us long enough, you'll know that I didn't like Oblivion when it came out. And I Oblivion is the game that I bought and played and bought and played and tried over and over again so many times. So I finally got into it. But so I was like, oh, I don't want to get. And also, like, I was looking at the Fallout gunplay and I'm like, we got Halo 3 last year. This gunplay is ass compared to Halo 3. And if you look at it as a first, if you look at it as a first person shooter, like that's objective, right? Like removing VATs, like just trying to shoot stuff. Like Fallout 3 was not designed to be a shooter like Halo. So it was awful by that comparison. So between that and the Oblivion comparison, I was just like, I have no interest in this game. And oddly enough, how I ended up coming around to Fallout was in 2010, the Skyrim announcement date, 11/11/11 came out and they showed off what Skyrim was going to look like, and the hype for Skyrim was unreal. I mean, I, as somebody who didn't care about Bethesda or Oblivion, I saw my brother Creighton get hyped for Skyrim, and it was just like, what? And I saw the, you know, the mammoths and the giants and like the grittiness of like the Nord stuff in the gameplay. And I was like, man, this game does look freaking awesome. And everyone and their mother is hyped for this game. So I remember like early 2011, this must have been, I guess it would have been after it probably would have been after I met you, Josh. Yeah, because I met you early 2011. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Actually, no, I know for a fact because I would come to Hy-Vee singing flying. I can't even deal with my voice either. Yeah, and because I was just getting into Oblivion literally around the same few months
that's kind of crazy to me that when we met that Josh, Skyrim hadn't come out yet. What do you think was a more popular launch experience, Halo 3 or Skyrim? Because that's a close one.
I feel like it's Halo 3, actually. Halo 3? Still. Okay. Yeah, I do. That wouldn't be the case today with an Elder Scrolls and a Halo. It wouldn't even be close. Man, peace to Halo.
Hoist the colors for Halo. Yeah.
R.I.P. Halo.
we still love you, Master Chief.
Yeah. So the hype for Skyrim was unreal. So I told Creighton in 2011, I'm like, sit down with me, hold my hand figuratively and literally, and help me get into Oblivion because
I like that.
I bought I bought this game so many times. I've tried so many times. I don't like Oblivion. Help me. And that's when Creighton and I sat in the living room and had two TVs. He was playing his version of Oblivion. He was playing his character in Oblivion. I was playing mine. And Creighton was just walking me through it, just telling me how to do every quest, exactly where to go. Because I didn't like the game, so I didn't want to figure out anything for myself because I didn't like it. And I've told this story in the podcast at least twice. I won't go through all of it, but basically when Oblivion hit for me was I managed to get through the main quest. And as soon as I finished the main quest, the Oblivion portal quest, I went to bed and I woke up and said I contracted vampirism. And I was like, what does it mean? And Creighton's like, oh man, are you ready for this? And I'm like, what? What happened? He's like, yeah, you're going to be a vampire now. I'm like, no, I don't want to be a vampire. He's like, well, you got to do the quest to get rid of the disease. And I'm like, Creighton, I want to go on this quest. And that's when Oblivion became cool to me. It was like I got it crystallized. I was like, wow, like that main story was kind of cool. But now like the story's over and I'm on my own story because I have vampirism on accident. And I got to go figure this out. And then I ended up doing the side quests and all that stuff and became I loved Oblivion. So then by the time Skyrim came out, I was there at the midnight launch with Josh and Creighton to get Skyrim. We told that story before. But all of that is to say is that because I got into Oblivion in 2011 in the preparation for Skyrim, that's what made me go, okay, well, now I got to play Fallout. So I went and played Fallout 3. And I actually got into Fallout 3 easier than I got into Oblivion because I remember I started playing Fallout 3, making my character, and then I found out about the bobbleheads. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. The bobbleheads increase your stats. And I realized I was like 40 hours into my Fallout 3 playthrough having a blast. And I found all the bobbleheads. And I realized that if I had found all the bobbleheads before I leveled my character, you can manipulate the stats so that you use the bobbleheads to raise the stats. And then you can allocate the stats other places. You don't got to waste the stats. So I think this is the only time I've ever done this in my life. If I've done it another time, I don't remember it. But while enjoying the hell out of the game and having a blast, at 40 hours in, I just deleted my character and started over. I didn't finish the story. I was like, I want to start from the beginning, knowing how to play this game, knowing where the locations are, knowing the bobbleheads are. I'm going to go out with my level one ass and collect all the bobbleheads, dying repeatedly trying to get to them. And I'm going to make sure I have all the bobbleheads before I start leveling my character so I can have all the stats boosted from the bobbleheads. And then that went into a full, like, I don't know, 60, 70, 80 hour playthrough of me playing through Fallout 4 a second time, even though I hadn't beat it the first time. And then doing all the DLCs, Mothership Zeta, all of that stuff. Operation Anchorage, all that. And I loved it. I was like, this is I probably said it was a 10 out of 10 experience, probably what I said. I would give the game an objective. I'd probably give it a 9. But yeah, so that's when I became a Fallout fan and then, played a little bit of New Vegas. Didn't end up beating that for years later till years later. Had no interest in playing Fallout 1 and Fallout 2 because they're not the same type of game. Of course. And then, I mean, the hype was at an unreal level in 2015 when we're building towards Fallout 4. And that was also when Josh and me and Justin and Creighton and Stephen Fuquay that I mentioned earlier, we all went to the Fallout 4 launch and that was a great moment, like as in the hype for Fallout 4, but that is also that ties back into that other story I've told in the podcast before where 2015 was that when it was when I went to the Halo 5 midnight launch and the hype wasn't there and everyone was buying digitally. And then I went to the Fallout 4 launch and the hype wasn't there. There was like 20 people in line and everyone was buying digitally. And then that's when my whole depression thing kicked in that we just told two podcasts ago. So it's funny how all these things tie together. The people, the games, the shows, the moments.
Yes, the Brian and Josh cinematic universe.
It's the cinematic universe.
Yes.
It's the Arbet Harvest universe.
This was a Fallout story. Yeah, dude, I remember that too because I had started, what was it? When did Gears of War Remastered release? Was it 2014?
I think it was 2014, summer.
That was the first game I started to buy digitally. Like, that was the first dive into that experience.
No. It was 2015 summer.
It was 2015? Okay.
So it was right before Fallout 4.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because I remember hanging out with Brian and the group for Halo 5 and Fallout, but then when it got time for them to go get in the lines for those, I went home, kind of like what Justin did with Master Chief Collection in 2014. So, yeah, so I mean, I remember you telling me that about Halo 5 and being kind of underwhelming. Weren't they handing out like masks, like Halloween masks or something?
Yeah, they were handing out like a lock and cheap plastic mask, and everyone in the line, like, this is this is mean because like I'm a freaking nerd too, but like I, in my memory, it was just like everyone, half the people in line were just the weirdest neckbeards ever. And I'm like, what the hell am I doing here? Like, not because I'm better than them, but because I'm like, I'm aging out of this. This isn't fun. All my friends are home playing it digitally. Like, let's move on from this. And that was Fallout 4 was my last, well, it was my last launch buying games physically until technically I bought Tears of the Kingdom physically and went to a midnight launch last year. There you go. Year.
Washed it clean, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like a retro. Better experience. That my last, was a great launch.
Yeah. My last one was Fallout. It was Fallout 4. That was
Fallout 4.
It.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't think about it at the time that like, it's like, what is it that thing they say about when you're a kid? Like, one day you went outside to play for the last time and you didn't know it was the last time. And it's like, I didn't know that was going to be the last.
I remember riding bikes with my friends all over the place. And then I remember, like, friends older than me, they got, like, their permit to drive and they quit riding their bike. Mm-hmm. And then they got their actual license to drive, and then eventually I got my permit, and then that, like, we just didn't ride bikes anymore. It was crazy.
Oh, the moment we got Xbox Live, dude, everyone stopped doing LAN parties.
Yeah. We talked about that in previous episodes too, dude. It's sad, man. This you can finally understand your parents where they're like, oh, nothing beats the old days. Everybody's gonna have that. Everyone is going to have that. Somebody's gonna be like, back in my day in Fortnite, you could buy this. And it's like, yeah, it's not that any one of us are better or actually had it better. It's just what mattered to us at our most like instrumental moments of character development.
That's nostalgia, ourselves. Right? Because like you the whole time you're a kid, you want to grow up. You can't wait for these things to come out or to be able to afford these things that you like have to wait for birthdays and Christmases for. And then like you get older and then it's like then you're nostalgic for those times because you realize finally how simpler they were. You realize how much more difficult real life is now. And then you're yearning for those days. Yeah, it's, man, nothing like riding a bike. Nothing like just hanging out and playing as a kid, sad, man. Dude. Yeah, but anyway.
That's why I even... Honestly, that's even why I dick around in RuneScape now in 2024 because it reminds me of childhood times. It's not really a great game. Mostly all you do is click stuff, but it just makes it feels good.
That's me watching Disney movies. I completely understand.
To bring us up to the show and then pass it over to you. So I asked you what your Fallout origin point was. I gave my Fallout origin point. Next question I was going to ask is, okay, from your origin point, Josh, you know, where does that bring you up to the show with Fallout? And for me, I almost got there, so I'll just finish.
Sure.
Fallout 4 came out at the midnight launch, and I had a blast with Fallout 4. I know Josh has said it on the podcast before, like, I was worried about Brian's health because he just went offline for like a week playing that game.
It was one day, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I beat it within a week, but I had a blast playing it. Like, I really enjoyed the game. No part of me was not having fun playing it, but like, as I finished the main story, some of the side quests, leveled my character, got some items, I kind of felt disappointed. I was like, this wasn't as good as Fallout 3 to me. This wasn't as good as Skyrim to me. This wasn't as good as Oblivion to me. And I was a little disappointed, but I don't think I realized how I might have been a lot disappointed because I still haven't played Fallout 4 since launch. I beat it and never returned. I'm actually excited to play it here maybe soon this year. With the next gen update that just came out and reevaluate. It'd be cool if we do a podcast like 4 months from now where I'm like, Josh, I'm a huge fan of Fallout 4. I didn't understand how amazing it was. Absolutely. You know, like, because I haven't played it in 9 years. Like, that's crazy. But so then basically, it's crazy, dude. My experience with Fallout leading up to the release of this show has been Fallout 3 is one of the best games, one of my favorite games of all time. I never really got hooked on New Vegas. 4 disappointed me. And we won't get Fallout 5 until I have a daughter graduating from high school. And that might not be a joke because of how far Fallout 5 is. So that's where it's been for me. It's like, okay, yeah, like this series, I never played 1 and 2. I never got attached to New Vegas. 4 disappointed me. Fallout 3 was so good. I loved it. So coming up to the show, I mean, I wasn't that hyped for the show because for two reasons. One, it was like the last time I played a Fallout game that blew my socks off was Fallout 3. And also, game show. I know we're in a renaissance era of like shows, games, and shows. Or a game show and movies are getting like good. I know we got like the Mario stuff, and we got the Last of Us. But also, we have the Halo show and stuff, which is not that great. So it's like, Fallout's probably not going to be that great. Well, then the Fallout show comes out, and the critic scores are insane. And it's like you have to watch this. It's as good as the games. Like, okay, holy crap! Right. And that brings us up to the shows. But so now I want to pass it to Josh. Josh, take us from. You already told us your origin point of playing Fallout. What was your life experience with Fallout from 2015 to the launch of the show? What was your relationship with the series?
Yeah, buddy. So I remember getting New Vegas, and man, this was a case of like
the part of me that's totally understands Brian. I went to GameStop one day and I was like, I'm going to get me New Vegas. And it was like $20 at the time. So I'm in there. I'm about to get it. And this guy who's in there, we had seen him a couple times. This guy was super great around this time. I don't know what year it was. It was probably like 2015. It probably was. It was like 2014.
No, are you talking about the Skyrim time? Like that?
Yeah, maybe you're right.
Tall, thin guy?
No, you're right. It was like 2012, I'm thinking. I'm thinking 2012. I got my dates mixed up. Time. But I'm in there and I'm about ready to get it. And this guy, I mean, him and I got along really well. I get along with everybody. But he's talking to me and he's like, man, you know, just for a few bucks cheaper, you could get the used copy. You know, just a few bucks cheaper. And I'm like, yeah, but I really want the new one. I mean, it's $20. It's fine. But he's like, yeah, but you could save this and this with the games. Are you a member of, you know? And I was like, I am indeed.
Hate it.
I am indeed. And all this stuff. And I remember doing it. I gave in. And I was, especially because at the time I was part-time. So it's like $20 now, you know, doesn't always sound that bad these days for most people. But back then it was like, that's Taco Bell money, bro. But yeah. I ended up getting it. I get home and I played like 20 hours of it. But the whole time I'm playing it for those 20 hours, like I ran into some guy named Boone. I remember. I think Zachary Levi voiced him or something, but I can't remember now. But anyway, I'm playing a little bit of it and it's okay for me. Like, I know it's great overall, but for me, I'm having an okay time. But the whole time in the back of my mind is this OCD feeling clawing at my brain going, you're playing a dirty copy. You're playing a used copy.
Makes me hate the GameStop.
Yeah, and I could not get that out of my head that I wasn't playing a copy that, like, I somehow developed in my brain. Yeah, I could have, and I was like, I don't want to go through the headache of that. So I thought, I'm just not going to play this. And then I ended up trading it in, blah, blah, blah. I haven't played New Vegas since. But I do really want to play it because as time's gone on and I've gotten more into Fallout and I've enjoyed
it. That's universally the one people say is the best.
Yeah, exactly. That has definitely made me take a whole different look at it. But then fast forward, Fallout 4 is about to come out. And in 2015, I mean, one of my favorite years. Every time it's got a 5, like we hit the middle of a decade, the year has at least been pretty awesome for me. 1995, my favorite year of all time. So many great things came out in that year. 2005, so many great things. Revenge of the Sith, Batman Begins, for example, you know.
Next year, Josh, 2025, what's it going to be?
I don't know. Avatar 3 for me. But, 2015 was great because, you know, I've said before, you had, like, Avengers Age of Ultron, you had Mad Max Fury Road, you had Jurassic World, you had Force Awakens on the game side. I mean, you had so many, like, Witcher 3, you know, Halo
Batman,
5 was coming.
Batman, Arkham Knight.
Yeah, and this one. So it was just an exciting time. And getting this game wasn't high among my list of, like, anticipated games, but I'm still very much looking forward to it, and especially just with the newer graphics of that generation. It just looked...
I remember you being excited because it looked more beautiful.
Yeah, that was a big selling point for me. So I played that, and anyway, I did end up beating that one. That's the one I beat all the way through. I went through the DLCs. I've told this story before, but I had a little headcanon experience with my character of finishing all the DLC and then kind of dropping all the stuff I had been carrying for so long, and I just had like a t-shirt and slacks, that pre-casual wear, whatever they call it in the game, and I had this like pistol with limited ammo, no stim packs or anything, and I said, I'm just going to go out there like I'm Paul of Arrakis, and I'm going to go out into the desert, right? I'm going into exile, and I'm going to go and just kill all these bad people until I die. And I got shot down by a Veta bird. And then once I died, I saw my character. I took a quick screenshot and then I just booted out of the game and uninstalled it. And I haven't played it since. So had a great experience with that game. Did not like all the building stuff. That was a huge thing I had to like get myself over the hump of, to like, okay, Josh, I'm going to play this game, but I'm going to at no point try to buy myself into this. I know I don't like it. So just like, I'm making a pact with myself. But yeah, that was a great experience. And that has left a good taste of Fallout in my mind.
I think you were doing that Fallout playthrough while we were started the podcast, like after we started the podcast.
That sounds right, because I remember that's how I became friends with Jeff. He had just started at Hy-Vee and it was like within a week or so, and he needed a ride home from work one morning, and I drive him home and he's like, hey, I heard you talking about that game Fallout 4, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm playing that right now. He's like, hell yeah, man. He's like, I love that game. So the whole ride home we started talking about Fallout 4.
Cool.
And I remember like at the end of the trip I was like, I think this guy's actually pretty cool. And he is.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. But then we get to this point, and like you said, with all this stuff, the reputation starting to grow with all these adaptations. When I first heard Fallout was going to be a TV show, there was a part of me on the movie side that was like, man, I'd just rather have a movie. But I also thought, cool, it's nice to see that. And then you got to see a trailer. You started seeing screenshots, trailers and stuff. And I was like, man, this actually does. Oh, well, they got Walter Goggins. Oh, cool. I didn't really know who Ella Purnell was at the time. I wasn't familiar with the rest of the cast. But Walter Goggins, I was like, oh, man, I've always liked that guy. How do you not like that guy? It's like, there he is, Mr. Goggleman himself. So that was pretty cool. And then all the reviews for these things coming out was mostly pretty good, you know. Mortal Kombat was kind of so-so for people, but then you have Halo Show, which didn't, you know, so-so for people, not super good. But all these other things are doing really well, you know. You got like just to name off a couple guys that have come out in the last couple of years, just to kind of set this up. You know, Last of Us, like you said, Resident Evil Show, I know kind of mixed, but Cyberpunk Edgerunners, Twisted Metal, the Ark animated series, Castlevania, Arcane, a Resident Evil animated show. I mean,
Mario
so many.
Movie.
Yep. On the movie side, yeah. Rampage,
Sonic movies,
Warcraft, the Sonic movies, Tomb Raider, Monster Hunter, Mortal Kombat, Assassin's Creed, you know, Uncharted. I can't remember if I mentioned that or not. But I mean, and there's Five Nights at Freddy's even recently, you know, and stuff like that. So, I mean, there has been a ton in the last like 10 years, let alone the last five even. And they've been varying degrees of success. But the consensus seems to be that more of these, more often than not, are doing well than the other ones. You know, then the reputation has changed. There's no longer a video game curse, it seems like. And when this was getting ready to come out, I was like, even, I mean, I should probably say this now, but like, this was the show that got me back on the TV front. Since then, since I have watched this show with Dad, I have gone and watched Reacher, which is amazing. I have gone and watched, I'm watching Shogun right now. I'm about to watch the Knuckle series that just came out as of this recording. So, I mean, that's awesome what it did for me. So I went in pretty open-minded because I'm like, well, I'm not as super into shows right now. It's kind of really difficult to get me over the hump for those with the commitment factor. But I thought I had a great experience with Fallout 4. So I'm going to take that and carry that forward. And yeah, man, wow. Amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're going to get into the show. The goal here is not to break down every episode or even break down plot points or characters. Really just to talk about what we liked. But go ahead, Josh. Go ahead.
Have you heard of that Reacher show? Have you seen that Reacher show?
With John Krasinski?
No. That's Alan Ritchson.
What are you talking about? I thought you were talking about Jack Reacher. No?
That's a Tom Cruise movie. There's
no, like, Jack Reacher is the Amazon series with John Krasinski.
No, that's Jack Ryan.
Oh, Jack Ryan. Man, I'm all over the place.
Oh, you're
okay,
good, man.
No.
You're good. Anyway, so, Reacher's like a crime show. And okay. It's got this guy, Alan Ritchson. He's in that new movie, Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare with Henry Cavill.
Okay.
A lot of people are saying they want him as Batman in the new DCU. Well, it's just hilarious, dude, because I don't watch a lot of crime shows. And like, there's moments, dude, where like he will go into a room, for example, and like there's a dude that's like nailed up to a wall, buck naked. He's dead. And the camera will like zoom in on Reacher's face. And he will make the weirdest deductions because as it zooms in on his face, he'll say something like, when he was 15, his mother bought him a Nintendo GameCube. But his first game for that was Katamari Damacy, only it was on the PS2. This caused him to quit playing video games altogether. And when he was 18, he enlisted in the Air Force. And I'm like, of course. Yes. Oh, my God. I never thought, you know, and it's just
sounds interesting.
It is a great show, though. With
you,
good
you finished it?
Yeah. Yeah. Just two seasons so far. It's a new
show. Are they still making more? Mm-hmm. Is that what it is? Mm-hmm. OK.
But anyway, that's cool. Yeah. Had a good time with that. I'm sorry. But Fallout is enabling this show enabled me to have fun with television again. So I'm excited to talk about it. Sorry.
Yeah. Josh, I have the Rotten Tomatoes pulled up for this. Do you or?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, you want to go ahead and do your normal spiel?
Yeah, let's crawl out to the Fallout.
Hello there. I'm here to show you a wonderful place. A veritable Camelot of the nuclear age. Not made by God Almighty, but the working man.
You can be a hero by purchasing a residence and a Vault-Tec vault today. Because if the worst should happen tomorrow, the world is going to need you to build a better day after.
The mission of the vaults should be important to everyone. Come up to the surface one day and restart civilization.
Can you tell me what's happened in the last 200 years?
Holy shit. You're an actual vault dweller.
I am.
I thought all you dipshits were dead.
What you're doing is insane.
I don't set the world.
It isn't like the vault out there. It's big.
I just want to start.
I've had a rough week. Practically every person I've met up here has tried to kill me.
I'm simply going to harvest your organs.
You need to go home. You come from a world of rules, of laws. You should not be alone.
Why did you join the Brotherhood?
To hurt the people who hurt me?
People are going to come after you.
Ain't much stage cleanup here, Vaulty. Well, now that is a very small drop in a very, very large bucket of drugs. Look out at this wasteland. Looks like chaos. But there's always somebody behind the wheel.
Everyone wants to save the world, they disagree on how.
There you are, you little killer.
A flame in your heart.
That actually... Before you said you were going to edit it, I was like, that'd be a good name for the show, but you do whatever you want. I don't care at all.
Man,
I was like, crawl it through the fallout.
Hey, that sounds good too, man. Yeah. Atom Bomb Baby, there's so many good titles. Yeah, no, that doesn't sound bad. So on the tomato meter, this sits at 93% with an average audience score of 89%. The synopsis reads, let me find it real quick. I think it's right there at the top. Somehow I got scatterbrained. Fallout is the story of haves and haves not. In a world in which there's almost nothing left to have. 200 years after the apocalypse, the gentle denizens of luxury fallout shelters are forced to return to the irradiated hellscape their ancestors left behind, and are shocked to discover an incredibly complex, gleefully weird, and highly violent universe waiting for them. So yes, if you're listening to this in 2024, this is new. And it stars the likes of Ella Purnell, Kyle MacLachlan, Walter Goggins, Aaron Moten as Maximus, which, we'll talk about the cast here in a bit, but it's got a lot of people involved in this, and, this pretty much to say is a little different on a TV side versus movies, because there's no box office and stuff like that, but...
There's a critic consensus, though, Josh. Did you read that?
No, I didn't. Go ahead and read that for me, Brian. I don't see it.
An adaptation that feels like a true extension of the games, Fallout is a post-apocalyptic blast for newcomers and longtime fans alike.
Man, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this landed pretty, pretty well. And I mean, it's new and it's fresh and we're all up in our feelings with it. But it's fair to say it's one of the best video game adaptations we've ever gotten. Am I right?
I feel like it's one of the best of all time. Yeah, like I feel like, so I guess if I'll go first and go through it and pass it back over to you. I mean, what is the best video game adaptation of all time? I would say there's only one, if we're going objective, right? Not personal feelings. I'd say there's only one thing that contests this, and that's The Last of Us. Do you agree with me?
I have not finished it, but I like it.
Okay. I did watch all The Last of Us. The Last of Us was, I mean, The Last of Us, here's the thing. It was as good as the Fallout show, in my opinion, but the thing that gives the Fallout show the edge is that The Last of Us show basically just adapted the game exactly. And the game itself, like The Last of Us is the poster child for video games that feel like movies, right? Like that's where the joke started. That's where Sony got their oh, you guys just have playable movies on your system. Like that's mm-hmm. you know, when you talk about fanboys versus fanboys, the clap back to PlayStation was always, well, I like to actually have games on my console, not playable movies, right?
Yeah.
And Last of Us was like the poster child for that. So the show is essentially just the Last of Us video game adapted, not one-to-one, but like on a broad scale, one-to-one. The same dialogue, the same moments, the same framing. They added new things in, took some things out, but it's mostly that. So what makes Fallout give The Last of Us a run for its money is that Fallout isn't, it's adapting the source material, but it's creating something completely new and fresh that it's not one of the games told in TV form. It's actually a sequel that's canonical to all of the games. This is the last story in the chronology, in the timeline of Fallout, and it is canon. So when you finish playing Fallout 4, Fallout 3, whatever, New Vegas, this takes place after it. Like, this is part of that canon, and it's new and it's fresh, and it's not just aping something that we've already played, but it feels so faithful that it works. So it's like, it feels like when I finished, this is what I did not expect to feel. When I finished watching Fallout, the show, I felt like I just played Fallout 5. Now, don't get me wrong, I want Fallout 5 still. This does not replace a new video game.
Todd Howard's like, no, you're not getting it now.
Yeah, like, no, this is not replacing. But like, this felt to me like another essential story in the Fallout universe. Mm-hmm. And since it's canon, unlike, you know, like the Halo show is like a silver timeline, it's not canon. This is canon. This happened. That means when we get Fallout 5, ostensibly, this is going to be the past. When we play Fallout 5, like, oh, that show happened in the past. It's always essentially possible. Probably won't happen, but it's always essentially possible. We can meet the ghoul or Lucy.
I would love to at least get references, and you got to imagine they're going to pack those in there.
The ghoul would be the easiest one, right? Because he could actually be alive. Even if the game takes place 100 years later, the ghoul could still be there, right? But so I think where this becomes, like, what is the greatest video game adaptation of all time in TV show or movie form? I think it really comes down to Fallout and The Last of Us. You might be able to throw Mario in there. The only reason I don't throw Mario in there.
Top five. What do you think? Top five.
Top five. Okay. Yeah. It's Fallout, Last of Us, Mario. If I'm trying to be objective, I think Arcane has to be in there. That was like one of the first to be like, oh, wow, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And then maybe, the Edge Runners, maybe?
Okay.
Am I forgetting an obvious one?
Because I would say the Mortal Kombat movie in top five, at least.
Is it? But, well, the only reason I was trying to, didn't it get horrible scores? Or you don't care about that?
Don't care.
Yeah,
the legacy of it is pretty well. Like amid all the ones that did.
Are you talking about the first Mortal Kombat movie?
From 95. Okay,
I was thinking of the new one.
Oh, I gotcha. But, yeah, okay. I should have specified. But no, the 95 Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying, like, I'm not trying to be like, oh, bad score doesn't count, Josh. That absolutely does count. I guess I thought you were asking from the angle of like, it was well received by fans and critics, which if that's not your angle, then yeah, I mean, I know Mortal Kombat, like it's one of the first to like set up the precedent for gaming movies. Same for like the Mario Bros. Movie in 92 and stuff like that. So yeah, that's absolutely like those things deserve.
But those are great picks. Huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't really disagree.
If we were just going for like what pleased fans and critics at the same time universally, I think Edge Runners and Arcane and Fallout.
You're right.
And,
I mean, you're right. You're kind of presenting it in the sense of like
a different.
Yeah. We've had like now the bridge of like critics and fans alike are really enjoying this stuff. Yeah, but that's definitely more of a thing now.
That actually helps my point a lot, though, because when I'm saying like what's the best one ever, and I say Fallout or Last of Us, the reason I exclude Mario is because critics weren't too hot on Mario, which I know I'm actually with all of you in saying, well, screw the critics. The Mario movie was amazing. I love the Mario movie. I couldn't ask for anything more. I think the critics were wrong on that. But if my point was to say, what are the best shows or movies that have adapted games that have married the fans and the audience and the critics all into one, Mario doesn't really make it there because it was a Rotten Tomato. It was not even Rotten Tomato, just, you know, Metacritic, it's lower. So anyways, comes out of Fallout and Last of Us. And I think on one hand, I think I'd give the edge to Fallout because, like I said, it's such a more monumental task. Also, Last of Us was just like, let's adapt real life with zombies. Fallout was like, this is wild, dude. There's freaking vaults, there's ghouls, there's like the Brotherhood armor, there's the wasteland. Like it's much harder. So I'd give the edge to Fallout. I think you can make an argument that The Last of Us is closer to like a 10 out of 10, where this is more like 9 territory for me. Like I felt like this show, while like in a subjective kind of up in your feels way, like the Fallout show felt perfect to me, but like it's clearly not perfect, right? Like some of the writing could be better here and there, I think. I think some things don't land completely. I think the CGI is a little rough, blah, 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 blah. But anyways, that is to say, so just to kick this off, you know, 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. I absolutely agree. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's great, certified fresh. I don't think you could ask for, is there really anybody out there who's going, man, I really wish they had adapted Fallout in a way that I liked. Like, come on, like, how could you ask for more than this in a show form? I just don't know. Like, what could you expect? I mean, Todd Howard's behind this. You got one of the Nolan brothers. They obviously understand the material. It's canon. It respects the games. So yeah, all that is to say, it's one of the top two. Somebody asked me in the Discord, like, what my favorite video game adaptation was. And I said, I don't know if it counts, but mine would be The Witcher, but I don't know if that counts because it's adapting the books. So
yeah, like, it's a gray area, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say The Witcher is mine, but I feel like The Witcher that clearly exists because sounds of the popularity like of the game of Witcher 3 and Henry Cavill. And I think all that stuff is pulling from those influences. But yeah, so Fallout's definitely, I would say it's the, even if it might not be my favorite, it's probably the best video game adaptation, in my opinion. I'm interested to hear what you say. I want to pass it over to you. But yeah, get into the show just a little bit more. I loved all three of the main characters, mm-hmm. and that surprises me because I did not like the Brotherhood dude, Maximus, for a while. Mm. It really took me some time. I loved Lucy right away because not only her charisma or her acting, just she has a lovable face, right? Her face looks like a cartoon character, and I mean that in a, she's pretty, right? So like, I'm not dissing her, but like, she looks like almost anime in a way, like, to me. She just, her big ooh-ooh. Eyes and her cheekbones, and just, she just has like a what I would picture someone drawing a character. So she's very likable right from the beginning. You know, she has good morals, so it's easy to attach to her, because even if you, either you think you have good morals or you wish you did, and that always is a likable thing in a character, you know, like, why would we hurt someone? Well, we should help them. You know, that's who she is. And so she was likable right away. Obviously the ghoul, Walton Goggins, like, here's the crazy thing. I'm actually not a Walton Goggins fan. I pretty much never really care for him in anything he does, which is weird because I know he's like beloved, but I didn't like him in the Ant-Man movie. That's the first thing that comes to my mind. And he was in that.
Yeah.
So when they introduce him as like pre the bombing, and where he's not, obviously it's been turned into a ghoul yet, he's very likable there as his actor character. And then you see him as the ghoul when he comes out of the coffin, and he's a badass and he looks awesome. And when he talks, you feel like there's such confidence behind him. So immediately, the ghoul was just a badass right off the bat. Like, this was the character, like, everyone knew, like, well, this is probably going to be the favorite, right? Like, even over Lucy. Then we get to Maximus, and I'm like, so like very beginning of the show, I'm like, okay, this dude has no, so it's funny, you know, the kids, they say Riz, you know, you got any Riz? Maximus ain't got no Riz. Like, I'm watching the show, I'm like, he has no Riz at all. No charisma. And his decision-making's kind of weird. Sometimes I think he's kind of stupid. They imply early on that he screwed over his best friend by putting, like, a blade in her boot so that she couldn't join the Brotherhood. So I'm like, okay, this guy's a dick. He has no charisma. He's an idiot. And it's funny, I guess they released the stats for the Fallout characters.
That's all.
And Maximus has very low intelligence. And I'm like, well, that makes a lot of sense. And I remember I was watching this with my brother, and my brother had already watched it by the time I got to his house. So he's watching a second time with me. And we're on like episode 4 or 5. This is only an 8-episode show. And I'm still telling my brother I don't like Maximus. And my brother's kind of giving me crap, like, how can you not like Maximus? And I'm like, well, I mean, do you blame me? Like, he's dumb. He's kind of, he lies to people. He doesn't have much charisma. By the end of the show, I liked him. And the thing was, is that's kind of what his character was. And I don't know how much credit I should give to the actor, the writing, both. But like, Maximus to me is, he's kind of more like a created character to me than Lucy is. Maximus is like he's the character that we all built, that we put low intelligence in, and we don't really know the world, but we're kind of like going about it. We're stealing the power armor. We're trying to kind of mostly be a good guy, but then we're like also willing to like lie or take advantage of someone to get a few extra caps. Like, I don't know. I felt like Maximus was kind of the embodiment of like me if I was in this world. Like, he's just kind of a big dummy thrown into it. So I really liked him. He also did have a little bit of charisma. Once you started seeing him like propping up his feet in a bed towel, eating popcorn in the vault, he's like, I love this place. This is great. I'll stay here forever. you know, where Lucy's like, we got to save people. He's just like, no, this is great. And so, like, I really came to like Maximus by the end. And so I liked all three of these characters. Obviously, they got the dog in there. They got the robots. They got the music, literally the music from the games. Mm-hmm. They got the sound of stim packs and all that stuff. The armor looks faithful as heck. It just, the whole world just feels completely like Fallout. And then to top it off, it tells a really interesting narrative that culminates in a final episode that, and I guess we're going to, this, so Josh, put, make sure you put this in the description. We're going to do no spoilers, I guess, because I haven't given any. If you correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think I've really given any spoilers. And I'll continue to not give any, and we'll just make this a non-spoiler episode. Is that cool with you, Josh?
Yeah.
Is that cool with you?
Yeah.
Okay. Just want to make sure. Unless you wanted to go spoilers.
I'm engaged. I'm listening to you, bro. Like, I'm listening to the podcast.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, this will be a non-spoiler.
I forgot I was a part of the show.
Yeah. Well, I'm about to pass it over to you, Josh.
No, I mean that in a good way. I'm enjoying what you're saying. Not a bad
problem. But, yeah, so I won't spoil it. But, like, what really makes the show so great, besides it being faithful and awesome and having great characters, is, like, it culminates in a final episode that ties everything we've seen throughout the show together. And it's, like, it's revelatory, right? It's like a Game of Thrones or a Westworld moment where it's like, oh, piece A and B and C actually all went together to get us to Z. And I never saw that coming. And that's what Fallout does. It's an interesting, compelling show on its own. That's what's so great about it, right? It did not have to be based off a video game. This show has the quality to exist on its own and get multiple seasons. It's intriguing. It's interesting. It's different. It's unique. But then it's also a perfect adaptation of a video game. And it takes place in canon, and it also exists within the game. That's why the games are blowing up on Steam and Xbox and PlayStation and all of that, is because people can literally watch this show and then go jump into one of several games that exist. And when they're playing in that world, they know that they exist in the same world as Lucy and the ghoul and Maximus and the dog. They exist there, right? Like, they may not run into them, but Bethesda and Amazon is telling you, we created this to be a part of that world. You get to go and exist in that. And that's so fun, right? Because this isn't to be a hater. It's just, I am a perfect example. I mean, Josh is too, really. I'm a huge Halo fan. I love those games. The show, they said, well, we're going to make it Silver Timeline. That way that we don't disrupt the canon of the games that fans like. That seemed like a really smart decision to me, because I'm like, why would you want to have to tread on eggshells, you know, with the Halo TV show, making sure you don't ruin like book 37 or random web comic from some Halo game, right? Or some Easter egg. So I thought that was smart. Well, then they make the show, and the show kind of sucks, right? Season one to me did suck, and sucked to Josh also. I watched season two. I found it quite enjoyable, but, you know, comparatively to what Fallout or Last of Us is doing, Halo is like way at the bottom of the Grand Canyon by comparison. So it was like, to see them risk it all on Fallout and say, this is canon, this takes place with the games, adapt it perfectly for game fans, make it canon, and then also just be a compelling show in its own right that's got people, like parents watching it, people never played games, people aren't interested, older people, younger people. It's bringing everyone together. It's also just a cool show, right? You know, you watch Game of Thrones and you're like, oh, wasn't that badass when this dude cut this dude's freaking arm off? Shit like that's happening in Fallout. It's awesome. I absolutely love the show. Honestly, when I finished it, I was in the mood to rewatch it again immediately. I was in the mood to play the games. I'm doing something I feel like most people aren't able to do, and I think it's just circumstantial to me because I was on vacation. I'm just going to wait it out. Like, everyone now is playing Fallout now. They're rewatching the show now. I'm going to wait it out. I'm thinking that maybe, like, I don't know, June or something, I will rewatch this and play Fallout. I'm kind of just going to let it pass me by instead of falling right into the hype, and then I can, it'll pick up. It's kind of like a Josh thing almost, where it's like, Josh is like, you know, when everybody's into the hype, you know, I kind of back away a little bit. That's not why I'm doing it, but like, it's effectively the same thing, right? Like, when I jump into this, it'll be a little less topical and a little less relevant. But yeah, the end of it for me, guys, for Josh. Yeah, this is everything I could want it to be. Subjective level, like, caught in my feelings, it's a 10, just because it's everything I'd want out of a Fallout show. Like, why would I give it less than a 10, right? Because if I ask myself, like, why would I do that? It's literally a perfect adaptation of the games that I enjoy. It's renewed my interest in the IP again. Not that I was ever uninterested, but I was like, oh, well, the last thing I had in my mouth was 76, and before that was 4, which was really good.
I hear great things about 76 these days. I know.
76, like, it sounds like
fruit of another.
Take it away, Josh. You want to go more? Or are you good?
I'm okay.
Okay.
Does it look like I got fish lips when I do this?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, if you're not concerned about it being a single player experience and you weren't around for the launch of 76, jump into it. Everything I hear is that it's a great game, mm-hmm. right? So why not? So for me, and then like I said, objectively a 9, because I feel like there's room for improvement for sure. You know, we talk about being caught in the hype and everything. Do I wonder if my score of this will go down once we're away from the hype? I mean, that's the thing. When you're in the hype, you don't know, right? But it certainly feels like it deserves a 9. Like, I guess maybe I could come down to an 8 when I have time behind me. I know in Rings of Power, me and Josh, we did Rings of Power on Sacred Icon here, and I think we both gave it an 8. I could be wrong about you. I know I gave it an 8. I think we both did at the ending of the show, and we've both come down. I came down to a 7. I think Josh might be at a 6.
Yeah, I don't know. I believe you, but at the same time, I've come around to it a lot more. There's the part of me that's like, I just accept it for what it is, and now that season 2 is creeping closer, I'm like, I'm getting excited again.
But we did like kind of level out objectively once that hype wore away.
That is canon.
And actually, even the Halo TV show, which I thought Josh and I were very on our game about, you know, like I said this just a couple episodes ago, like I gave season one of Halo show a 5 and Josh gave it a 3. And then we thought that was us not being caught in our hype. And then we come back a year later. We're like, actually Brian gives it a 3. Josh gives it a 1.
Canon.
So it is interesting to see, like, will this show be not as hyped to us in time? Will we bring it down? But for me, it's a 9. That's all I have to say about the show, Josh. The floor is yours. Talk it away, and then we'll get out of here.
All right, man. So, yeah, you made a great point. You said something in there just about how it makes you want to go play the games. That's when you know, like, one of these adaptations have been successful.
Nailed it.
The Mario Brothers movie made me want to. It was my come to Jesus moment with that. Last of Us. I mean, all these, anytime they land
one. Yeah, Last of Us, I went and played Last of Us 1.
Yeah.
Guess what, guys? I'm not being a hater, but I literally I did not play Halo after watching season 1 or 2 of Halo. Because for me, it was just kind of icky. It was like, it's either bad or it's not as good.
That's almost the factor, isn't it? Did it make you go play the games? You know, that's the question, right?
But, no, I was like, nah, I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah, same here. I was like, Halo going to go back on the back burner for a long time.
Yeah.
Going to put you in there. Going to get a little bit of frostbite. Might have to throw you away like them chicken tenders in the far back right corner of the fridge. Or the freezer, I mean.
We'll get a Halo movie from like Denis Villeneuve. Like in 20 years and it'll all be good.
Yeah.
But Josh, go ahead. I interrupted
you. No, you didn't. You're good. So yeah, I feel like this show really stuck the landing because of that. I am someone in my own mindset who has always talked about, like, it's all about the events. It's all about the memories, man. And midnight launches would sometimes bum me out because I would ride the journey of hype, anticipating a game with all my friends. And then the moment we got the game, we all go our separate ways. And it felt like an opposite reaction to, I guess, what my mind had become accustomed to, right? I'm not continuing it with my friends.
Feels like we'd be all in it together.
Yeah, but we're not. And it doesn't necessarily need to be with certain games. It's just that's what my mind got used to. I'd conditioned myself. And with movies and stuff, with shows and stuff, you know, it's like, you know, a lot of people, and maybe some of you are like this, maybe some of you are like me, but for a lot of people, they will go watch a movie and they move on with their lives. And what I mean by that is, like, you go see a Marvel movie. Maybe you go see the new Deadpool and Wolverine. You go, man, this is awesome. What's the next one coming out? Captain America? Okay. And then you go move on with your life. You go get some lunch. You go home. You watch television. You get on socials. You don't think about the movie anymore or talk about it with people. For myself, I'm like, I want to stay in this. I want to speculate on it. What do we got coming out next? Oh, I want to record this on the Patreon. I want to do a podcast with Brian. If there was a video game, I wish there was, like the old days. You know, I became accustomed to that stuff. For me, these experiences always like represent like the beginning. Almost like your journey begins here, but it continues elsewhere. That's the mentality I like to have with things when I'm into something. So for me, this landed at. It not only brought me back into TV shows, but it made me want to go play the Fallout games. I played like probably 10, 15 hours of Fallout 3. I'm done. Why am I done? Because I was fighting off some Mire Lurks. I used up all my ammo and I didn't put enough points into melee and all I was using was my baseball bat. And I said, you know what? I want to go make another new game. I'm going to create a character and I'm going to call him Buffalo Ranch and I am going to make him put all my stats into melee and he's going to be super buff and strong. And I got 5 minutes into that character creation and I said, I don't want to play this anymore. I'm moving on with my life. So, you know, I'm kind of done with that. But suffice it to say, like, this show was like the beginning of that experience. It was also like, you know, come back to shows, also like remember how much you like Fallout, but also like, man, it just complements everything so well, everything Brian said, and it just made me want to play the games. And to me, like, that lets the show gestate in my mind and leaves it in such a good place. And just
how it ends, some of the reveals that are in there, I'm like, an old atom bomb in my mind blowing up. But man, like, if I can talk about the cast a bit, Ella Purnell, Bug Eyes. Every time I saw her, I kept my head, my brain just went Bug Eyes, and I'm just
well. Thinking, that's why like, they say she looks like a cartoon character. It's the eyes.
I get it, man. I just to me, I kept thinking if I was in the wasteland and I saw her, and I'm trying to scavenge, I'm gonna target her eyes and vats and at least get a 39% chance of hit.
That's pretty good.
You know,
you'd be like, you were definitely above ground when the nukes hit because something is atomic about you.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think I'm a vault dweller, but I'd probably not be. Probably not.
And this is no hate because she's very
And I mean, like, I'm not like I'm indifferent to her, but like she did great. Like I have nothing negative to actually say about her or anything. Pretty woman, and I loved her character. I think Lucy was great. Okie dokie, for me, that made my pants do a hokey pokey. So I was like, I love that line, you know? So I was like,
can we get that on a shirt? Character.
Yeah, I know, right?
Okie dokie, you know, made my hokey go pokey.
Yeah, you know, absolutely, man. So, but she was cool. I love what, yeah, you said it too, but like, she's like the best of us, man. She's like the kind of person you aspire to be. And I love that her innocence kind of seeps in a little bit through this show into the wasteland where people are like, huh. Didn't know someone could be that good. You follow, you know?
Imagine not being a dick.
Yeah, exactly, bro. Exactly. So I love that she has a sense of innocence to the world that she brings. Just overtly kind, you know, and not with no sense of perversion to it either. Not doing it for her own benefits. It's just how she was raised. Kyle MacLachlan, I love this guy. I mean, my first impression of him was in the Flintstones movie, bro, as the villain. So I love him. I mean, I know, you know, you got Corey with Twin Peaks and stuff like that and everyone else. But
Dune.
Absolutely, Dune. So, but yeah, I mean, I love that he's in this. I love that there's more to his story. Because when I first was seeing previews for this show in my head, I thought this guy's going to be in like one or two episodes. You get more of them than that, but I won't give more away. Walter Goggins, there's the Goggle Meister, the Goggle Master. You know, that's every time I see him, there he is. That's the guy. You know, I think the opening sequence with him at that birthday party with his daughter is one of the best in terms of video game adaptations, but even as a show, best moments that just cook. You guys remember in Last of Us, the whole episode, it's just building up to what we come to know, right? In season one of Last of Us, right? And then like at the very end, you see like shit going down and you're playing witness to it in a way that's a little bit more expansive, a little bit more than what you get in the video game. Because the video game kind of thrusts you right into that, like kicking off. There's a little bit of like cooking before that, right? Where you start to get the sense like stuff is going wrong, like with the neighbor and stuff like that. So
yeah,
but then when it really had like all goes down, I remember you see like a shot of like a plane just crashing down. I'm like, holy shit, like this is why this show deserves to be like an hour long. It reminds me of Game of Thrones, you know, like when you would like when you get to the Red Wedding and the whole episode's just cooking and there's this sense of an unnerving feeling creeping around and something's wrong. And then like it finally happens and you're like, holy shit. Like I'm horrified, I'm disgusted, but also great television. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm happy to consume. So I felt that way with this one when like everyone's having a great time with the birthday party. And then the daughter holds out her thumb, you know, and you see just a bomb going off. And just as he sees it himself, you feel that sense of dread of like, and especially like what you come to learn later on in the season, knowing like how that retroactively like brings awareness to what he's thinking. It's horrifying as he gets on his horse and like with his daughter and is trying to leave. Yeah. You see everyone trying to like hop in cars. And I'm just only going to cover that part, but.
No, I mean, we can put in the description, like, light episode.
Yeah, spoilers, I mean, I feel like most people have at least seen the first episode by now. But, yeah, I mean, just that sense of dread that is going on is everyone, no one knows what to do. You've heard talk about this for so long, and it's finally happening. To see that happen in the show, I'm so glad that this is, like, my first experience of it, my first impression, whereas the games mainly talk about it, to my knowledge. So that was just a great opening to me of how that came to be. I love the vault stuff. I love the cast. I love the little inner vault politics for that vault. What vault was it again, Brian?
33, I believe.
Thank you. Yeah, I kept Fallout 3. I'm too fresh on. I'm like 101. But I love the vault politics that go into all that. I love that they get to go to a different vault and experience that. I won't go into that, but I love what comes with that. With Maximus, look, Aaron Moten. First time I've ever seen this guy as Maximus or just in anything. Man. With Jonathan Majors gone from the MCU, I would love him to be the new Kang. if you're gonna replace Kang, I would love for him. Like his
looks
voice,
wise, I think he could work. Looks but wise, I don't know about charisma. Voice,
well, I well, his stats are low in this show, Brian. But maybe they'll be in the MCU. Maybe they'll be.
That's
high.
What I'm saying. I don't know how much to credit the actor because he doesn't have much charisma. But I think that might kind of be the intention.
Yeah, you could be right. You could be right. But I love.
Do you agree with me, or do you think he has a lot?
No,
of
No, I think you make a good point. I think you make a good point, but. Yeah, I would like him to. He's the first person I've looked at that where I'm like, yeah, I could see that. I could see that. But I want to see him in more stuff now. And I love that. That's the thing about every television show when it comes out. You see, guys, it's like what happens? The television show starts. Let's look at Stranger Things. Stranger Things comes out. It's immediate smash success, right? They get into production pretty quickly with season two. Season two comes out. You start kind of you don't know how long it's going to go, but you have a limited shelf life with these stars because what's going to happen is if it turns out to be a success on arrival, then all these other movie studios and stuff are going to try to say, I want to snatch this person up. I want to get this person. They want to start cherry picking these actors to get them in their new projects because for one, you got the appeal of like coming off this, which is highly successful, but also like we got another person in the pool to play around with in our movies. So when that happens, some of those become so successful with that quick transition that then suddenly there's limited shelf life with their time on the show because their movie career has taken off so much and maybe they weren't contractually obligated to another season or a couple seasons because the show just landed, right? You don't know how long it's going to go. You don't plan on a show being 9 seasons at the beginning. You just hope. So what ends up happening is sometimes it's harder to get those people back. What have we seen with Stranger Things? It's taking forever to get season 5. Like not only like it took forever to get season 4 and part of that was the pandemic, but it's taking forever. We're waiting 2 years sometimes for seasons of television shows now. And it's just, to me, it's like, I mean, that's a hill I'll die on, but like there's no excuse for that. You could say production value. You could say all this stuff, movie like quality, they're valid points to make, but it's a television show that, you know, you're supposed to be able to kind of consume on a weekly basis and stuff. There just shouldn't be that. It should never take that long. So, I feel like, you know, that gets tougher to do. Now, this show immediately got a green light for season 2. Pre-production is already underway on this. So that makes me feel good because I feel like, okay, I don't know how long the show is. Nowadays, most shows, if you're not still on cable somehow, you're lucky if you make it to 5 seasons. I hope this show makes it that far. If it continues the kind of success that it has, I would love to see its story play out. I feel so good about the momentum, the narrative, how it looks. The only real criticism I think I have about the show, and it's just a personal thing, it's not something I really attribute to the show's quality or not, is just that when I play the Fallout games, the wasteland feels a bit busier. It doesn't feel as desolate, despite still feeling that way. But I loved this show. The chicken fucker, Dr. Dude, was hilarious in his own ways. The kid, I call him the kid that, like, he's spoilers. So he's one of the guys that is alongside Maximus, and he's one of the like peons or whatever that serves with the dude.
Squire.
Yeah, Squire. Thank you. I always call him Johnny Appleseed anytime I see him in anything like Superstore. There's Johnny Appleseed. But I mean, I love the cast in this. I love how they explore. You got the Brotherhood of Steel, you know, just, you know, the Vault Dwellers. You got some of the ghoul. I mean, they do enough to like really get you excited about where they could potentially explore more with creatures and, you know, and also locales and stuff like that. And I mean, you see a Red Rocket Station and stuff. And I was just like, oh, my gosh, it's from the games. You know, I felt like your dad almost watching Force Awakens where I'm like, it's just like the cantina from New Hope. You know? So that was a good feeling. But yeah, I mean, I just hope that, you know, if this show is as good as it is, I mean, I think everyone involved is going to want to be involved. But here's the thing. Walter Goggins does a ton of stuff. He does movies. He does shows. Kyle MacLachlan, same thing. Ella Purnell and Aaron Moten could potentially take off because of this. Ella Purnell especially, I look for her to take off. I mean, she's been in other stuff. I think Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, a Tim Burton film.
Voice of one of the main characters in one of the other most popular video game adaptations, Arcane. She plays the voice of the character Jinx.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've seen a little bit of that. I just haven't finished it, but that's cool. I didn't know that. But yeah, I mean, her career could really take off now, and same with Aaron. So, I mean, again, I hope the show can go with a good enough production and quality rate that they can retain these people if they go off to do movies and be able to finish the show on its own terms. Because sometimes that just doesn't happen. You see people leave or it takes so long to get to a show. You lose enthusiasm. You know, I remember losing complete enthusiasm for season 4 of Stranger Things. And I was just like, why is this even happening now? It's been like 3 years.
See, that's actually, I'm, I'm glad you said that because I don't want to come off as a Stranger Things hater. I love Stranger Things when it came out. Yeah. I still think it's great, but I lost interest in the franchise past season three. It took too long, and that's why I almost said something when you were saying like, "There's no excuse for a TV show to take 2 years." I may not use that wording because you don't need to agree with me or anything, but I feel like there is excuses for why. Like, I understand why it happens, especially when these shows are operating on like the budget and the scale of what we would expect from movies back in the day. So I'm like, to me, like, there's plenty of good excuses, but I think more to your point, it doesn't matter what the excuse really is. TV shouldn't be designed in a way that where 2 or 3 years pass between seasons because you lose your audience. No. I mean, you're completely out of the zeitgeist. Absolutely.
Most people with that stuff, with that kind of like take, I guess, that I have, most people are quick to defend it, right? And I'm not saying you with that you make a great point. But the reason why I say that stuff is because that's how long it takes for some films to come out. 2 hour films. Yeah. So like in one sense, if this had been the status quo for years, I could be like, well, of course I understand this for television shows. It's a 8 season show, 6 season, 10 season or 10 episode. You know,
The idea of shows is you come back to them every year.
Yeah. That's the whole point. So I'm like, but nowadays television has changed a lot and it's more, we've really gone from like 20 episode serialized episodics, you know, shows to shows with higher budgets that run more, you know, usually as little as 6 to 10 episodes. And when Game of Thrones came out in 2011, that kind of heralded the golden age, the golden age of television. You know, Lost was kind of there at the end of it. Breaking Bad was kicking it, helping kick it off too and stuff. But it was Game of Thrones that really kind of solidified like must-see TV. And it had 10 episodes. Well, I didn't know watching it for the longest time that that was going to eventually become the norm, and even shorter than that would become the norm. Well, now these shows have a quality that's closer to movies in a lot of ways. So again, I can understand some aspects of it, but you know, television has changed more to from serialized or episodic stuff to a miniseries event. That's really what it is, because you go and you watch something and then you often wait like 2 to 3 years for another season. And it's good quality television. It's must see, but you lose a lot of momentum in that. And I just hate that because I'm like, that's what movies have done forever. I'm used to that with movies. Like, go ahead. If that's got to be a thing, at least I can go to these television shows where they have a more rapid return rate. But that's just changed a lot. So it's, I know people will defend that and I totally understand it. I'm not saying I'm inherently right.
That's the thing is like, I feel like my defense would be of like, you know, it's the whole like immovable object meets unstoppable force. Like if they can't create it in less than 2 years, they can't create it. It's too ambitious. It's too big. Mm-hmm. But
well, at that point, I'm like, why not do
the part of me? I think just the industry has changed. I think once River's 20, there will be no question about why shows take this on. But to your point though, what I'm saying is though, I think at the end of the day, you're still right though, Josh, because the TV show should not take 2 years, 3 years. You lose me.
Yeah.
Like I know you wouldn't agree with this because you like Stranger Things more than me, but like I would be fine never seeing season 5 again. I will because Erica was going to want to watch it, but I'd be fine if I never saw it again. Honestly, I love Rings of Power and I want to see the second season, but like they're starting to lose me there. I'm like, it's been so long since I was relevant. You know, like I agree with you, even though maybe the take's a little different. Sure. The end goal's the same. Well, I think you're right that
it does suck because you get used to it for like a month or two of like watching an episode a week and just talking about a show, speculating, and then it's over. And it's not just over for like a year. It's a couple years. And then by that point, it's like, it's had time to almost get its own sense of nostalgia to it. And you're like, oh, wow. Oh, you're coming back now. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. But the problem why that is, and I will move on from this, but the problem why this stuff is what it is because it's streaming. Streaming has like changed the game so much.
Yeah.
Like what used to happen with a lot of the movies when they come out, if they bombed the box office, DVD sales were there to help. And a lot of these movies would get sequels because the DVD sales were so high. That's where the term cult classic came in, because they might not make a lot in the theaters, but then they'll sell and make a lot on home video. That was a huge benefactor. What's happened since then? We're seeing physical media phased out so much, little by little. You hear that stuff with like Target as of recently, Best Buy in the beginning of the year and stuff like that. So that whole market has completely changed. So the industry when it comes to cinema has completely changed. Your movies are kind of do or die on the big screen. What happens with that? Like long term, you have people now that have to come up with a different approach to how they're making movies, because you can't just say, oh, this one may or may not do well in the box office, but we feel pretty good about this one. We'll package it as an unrated version, as an extended director's cut on DVD, Blu-ray, 4K, and it'll make lots of money more than likely. If it doesn't survive here, it will survive there and we'll benefit, and then maybe we can get a sequel. You don't know. That whole conversation is just gone now, so the approach is completely different. So even with streaming and stuff, you saw the strikes and stuff last year. So much of that has changed because of AI, but also like no one really knowing, like, you know, there's not a whole lot of room for royalties there, you know, at that time. And people don't really know what the reception is to a lot of these shows in terms of listener or consumer base.
Well, because a lot of the actors' contracts was based on like the residuals from syndication and stuff.
Yes,
like
exactly.
That. And then when they get on a show that's like for Amazon Prime, it doesn't fall under the same clause. So it's like now you get no residuals.
Yeah.
You get no syndication.
So yeah. That's completely changed the game on television. So, I mean, now, you know, that's still such a new area. And it's all about coming up with shit to, like, retain subscribers base, right? You want the subscriber retention. So, like, they said that for Disney. One guy said that for Disney. Like, when it came to, like, 2019, there was a notion of just, like, put out whatever the hell we can put out. Like, don't question it, really. Just we need to get content out for consumers to want to keep our subscription, keep subscribed to us to make that all worth it and make money and stuff like that. But that's why you see so many up and down things with these streaming services and then the password crackdowns and all that shit. So I don't mean to go on that whole tangent. It's just to say that, like, we're in a different era. So I can understand why this stuff takes a couple years. But I love Fallout so much, I don't want it to. I'm ready to watch it now. I want to start season two now.
Yeah.
You know, and I do have plenty of games to play in the meantime, and that is awesome. And great job on Bethesda's end to promote this next-gen update for Fallout 4 in the meantime as a way to say, hey, you've enjoyed the show, now go play the game. That's exactly what it is. That's so cool. And I feel great for Todd Howard. It's my own headcanon, right? I'm reading into it myself, so keep that in mind when I describe this because it's my own meta-narrative, not necessarily what happened. But there's an interview that IGN had on the red carpet premiering the show with Todd Howard, and they were like telling Todd Howard that they gave the show a 9, and he was like really surprised in the show, in that clip, and you can see that in his face. And my headcanon was like, man, he really needed it after Starfield. And I'm not poo-pooing on Starfield. It's just knowing what the reception was for that, you can almost tell that he's kind of surprised, because it's not like they put out stuff every day because of how long it takes to make their games and going franchise to franchise now, going through that cycle. So I just felt really good. Again, it's not a poo-poo on Starfield. I know it has its fans. I can't wait for the day that I really want to play it and I get in the mood to play it. But it was just nice to see for this to come out and land as well as it has immediately. And for the cast to be a mix of like familiar people that you've seen before, but then some unknowns or come ups. And I always feel like that's the recipe for success, man.
You didn't even mention Ben from Lost.
Yeah, Benjamin Linus was, yeah, he's in there for a bit. So, yeah, I don't want to spoil
too much. Well, his head's in there for a lot.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil too much, but yeah, but it's a great show. I loved how it looked, man. I loved how, like you said, Brian, the Stimpak sounds. I loved how some of the pistol sounds, you know, it's everything is so familiar. And I know that some things are tweaked a little bit with some of the canon aspects, I think, but not that big of a deal to me, even if it was like, I mean, I'm used to Star Wars, like, they just brought back Asajj Ventress in the Bad Batch, and they're like, oh, yeah, we'll figure out another time how to explain away how there's a book that canonically says she died, but here she is alive, you know? Like, you just...
Somehow Palpatine returned.
Yeah, bro! Oh, my goodness, that's dead on. That's bang on, as Joe would say. But anyway, I love the show, man. Freaking awesome, dude. Crawl out to the Fallout. Love the vibes, man. Just brought me back to television.
Okay, Josh, do you agree with the Rotten Tomatoes score? Do you think it's the best game adaptation?
No.
Okay.
But I think it's up there. I think it's up there, man. I don't.
What do you think is the best game adaptation?
I think it is Mortal Kombat. I think it is. And okay. Obviously critics don't necessarily agree with that, but it was a different time in 95. You know, different experience, and that was really one of the first ones out there. You did have, again, like the Mario Brothers, you did have like Double Dragon and stuff like that coming out, Street Fighter, but Mortal Kombat was the first and only one that really had success for so long, and I think even to this day that movie does hold up pretty well. I'm biased.
This is the one you saw 9 times, right?
No, that was Mortal Kombat Annihilation, and I saw it 11 times, bad and it's the worst, one of the worst 11. Ones I've ever seen. So,
no, bro, that was a different one, and it was 11 times. Thank you very much.
They killed Johnny Cage in the first, like, 5 minutes of the movie, and Kid Me was like, wow, why spoilers. Is it not the same guy? And, you know, I was like, as I got older, I was like, that's why. Who wants to come back for 5 minutes to get your neck broken? But I think it's just it is, maybe it's not the best anymore, but it's in the top three, and I think it still deserves.
Do you agree with Rotten Tomatoes?
Absolutely. No, I think it's more or less close. I don't know. I'd probably sit it at maybe a 90, but 93 is fine. I'm not offended by that. 89 for the audience score. I'm surprised that's not actually a little bit higher. But man, that's an awesome
score. I guarantee the reason it's 89 is because a bunch of people thought that this show made New Vegas not canon, and they went and bombed it. You heard that discourse,
right? That's what I was hinting at earlier. Yeah, that's what I heard.
For those of you that don't know, it's all been cleared up. New Vegas is canon. All the games are canon.
Yeah. I can't imagine they would purposely just seek to do to go against that. You know what I mean? When they know how much people love that game. So you don't want to give the middle finger to it. But yeah. No, dude, awesome show, man. I am having a great time with this Fallout Renaissance
right now. Does it make you feel like you're young and you're in your prime?
Yeah, bro. I think, you know, you and I initially going into this episode, I thought we were going to be 60 minute, man. We've got a little bit over that. So, you know, but yeah, man, pretty fun show, you know, little atom bomb fun. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know? Atom bomb, baby.
Yeah. I remember first playing like Fallout 4 in the first week, and you had like, I had this one random car flying around, like just around my screen as if it was like possessed. And I was like, yes, well, back to the Bethesda game, Fallout, here we go. I was like,
it's funny you say that, because the the next gen Fallout 4 that just came out has broken problems on all consoles.
Really? I have not looked that up yet.
I'm guessing you have the Xbox version, right?
Yes.
Luckily, that's the one in the best shape. The only thing wrong with the Xbox version is when you go to choose if you want quality or performance mode, quality mode doesn't work at all.
Was that the 40 FPS?
No, that's the, no.
Isn't performance 60?
Performance is 60. Quality mode's like 4K ray tracing. That one does not work.
Okay.
Wow. Like, if you turn it on, it does nothing.
Do you think there's the sense, like, that they just tried to get this out to coincide with the show and it wasn't ready?
That would make sense, because why wouldn't you get it out, like, the day the show released, not, like, 2 weeks after, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, like, on PC, it's, like, broken in a ton of ways. And then on PlayStation, if you got it through PS Plus, it won't let you upgrade. It won't let you upgrade and shit. So, it's wild. Wow. But, yeah, anyways...
I can see why you're going to wait all the more, though.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I was going to play it on performance mode anyway, so I have it on Xbox, so it's fine. But yeah, no, it's awesome, and it's definitely got me more excited for Fallout again. And yeah, I mean, so Josh, your favorite Fallout game is 4, is that correct?
Yeah. I'm not saying it's the best, though. Okay. It's the one I've beaten, spent the most time.
Well, my favorite is 3, and most people say it's not the best.
I love the voiceover stuff. I'm not saying it's better. Again, I loved using the sarcastic option so many times.
It appealed to you.
One guy would ask me, you know, he'd be like, I'm sick with poison. And I'd be like, drink some water. You know, or you'd say something crazy, and the character's like, oh my God. You know, I loved just the reactions, just playing with that. And what was the guy, what was the companion, Nick Valentine, you had?
Yeah, he's,
man, awesome. One of my favorite companions in a video game ever. Loved him.
Sure. I mean, yeah, that's I mean, the companions got much better in 4.
Absolutely.
Did 3, it was like you don't even think about him, really.
No. Brian, final thoughts?
Guys, final thoughts is I love the show so much. I am in the mood to play Fallout right now, but I'm gonna stick to Roller Coaster Tycoon for a little bit longer, I think.
Hell yeah, bro.
And
it's a nice cooldown for you, right? After
I went so hard for final 90 hours of Rebirth. I gotta just chill for a while. So chill for a while. Before I jump into another big RPG. But yeah, the show's amazing. I recommend it to anyone, even if you don't like
me too.
Even if you don't like games, if you don't play video games, I still recommend the show. What's insane to me, Josh, if you had told me years ago that Amazon's going to release a giant big budget Fallout show and a giant big budget Lord of the Rings show, and the better one is going to be Fallout, I would never, ever have believed you. And this is me as a huge obviously Josh as well. We're both huge Middle Earth fans. I think objectively, there is no shot that Rings of Power is better than Fallout. Just, I understand if you might like it better. I probably like Rings of Power better just because of my biasness, but like, this is a clearly better show. It's not really.
No, I for think, me, yeah. Man, I think Rings of Power is still fun in its own right, but they went down that approach of like the week to week mystery of who's this, who's that, what's this going to be. And
oh, Josh,
it's like that stuff's already been told. Whereas Fallout's like,
I ain't going to spoil anything, but I've been reading some deep, deep cut rumors for season 2, and I don't like it. It sounds like they're just going to do it. I'm not going to spoil anything here, but like, it sounds like they want to do a different shade of like Guess Who's Who the whole show again.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no.
People liked that, but it's not good for the property.
Not, No, that's not Lord of the Rings. Yeah. Like, I was okay. I was actually more okay with it than you for one season. But anyways, guys, Prime's got
dual man video game.
Prime's got some good content. Yeah. What, Josh? Would you say? Do you think, as far as you know, Fallout is the best thing Prime has?
Oh man, it's got to be up there. It's got to be.
I mean, because all I can think of is Rings of Power, Jack Ryan that you corrected me on, Wheel of Time, which I know is kind of big for some
good
people.
Good Omens. They got some other good stuff. I mean, their streaming service is definitely picking
up. Mr. and Mrs. Smith is the one that took off. The Boys. Oh shit! Isn't that
yes. Prime? Oh, The Boys is huge.
Okay, The Boys is bigger than Fallout, probably. Maybe, I don't know. I don't really know. So all right, guys. Well, we would love to hear from you, whether it be in the Discord, sending us an email, voice clip, leaving us a review on that iTunes or Spotify, you know, you choose. Be great. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you thought of the Fallout show. If you liked it, if you didn't like it, what it got right, what it got wrong, what your favorite Fallout game is. If you're excited to play Fallout 5 20 years from now, just let us know. Hit us up.
Brian, you about to get you about to go into bats when you get your lunch?
Oh, dude, I am going to run out of here, out of here so quick and get my Chinese.
You gonna get some Chinese? Wash it down with some Nuka-Cola.
I'll wash it down with some Nuka-Cola. Yeah,
20 HP, 5 rads. Boom.
And then I'll take some rad away.
There you go.
That's like a cookie.
Yeah, I want some of that. I might get me some of that Blam Co mac and cheese. You know what I'm saying?
Ooh, that sounds good. Actually, you know what's sad, Josh? Is like 10 minutes into this podcast. I didn't realize that 10 minutes into this podcast, Erica texted me and she's like, "I'm starving at work. Could you please bring me some mac and cheese?"
Oh, really? I got that Blam Co podcast.
I was like, shit, well, I just now saw this an hour later, and I'm podcasting.
You know what, man? Every time Dad and I go to, if I got to run errands, got to go to the store, pick up some milk and shit, Dad's like, we got code names for the milk, right? So regular milk's Moo Moo Juice, and then chocolate milk's called Thinking Juice. We got code names. I got code names for all kinds of things. So I love, get me some Blam Co. This one I'm going
to
call
Mac. You need to introduce some Poopin' Juice into there.
Poopin' Juice. Oh, that's prune. Yeah. Yep, that's the prune. Juice. They got that blue Star Wars milk I'm trying to give. But anyway, Fallout. Yeah, man.
Crawl out through the Fallout, everybody. We love you guys.
Love you guys.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Sacred Icon Podcast. And as always, keep it sacred. And war never changes.